Hello, I'm Chris Cetullo, and this is That's History, our regular segment where we look at moments in history and their echoes, parallels, and resonance for today. I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here, as always.
And so we're looking back 50 years to a hot, hot August in Philadelphia in 1964. What happened then?
Well, it was the North Philadelphia riot. And it began on August 28th, 1964, exactly a year after Martin Luther King delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech at the Mall in Washington, D.C. It started at 22nd and Columbia Avenue, which you can't find now because, of course, it's 22nd and Cecil B. Moore Avenue. And what happened was two policemen, a white and a black policeman, stopped a car that had a couple in it that seemed to be arguing. And they thought that the couple was inebriated, and they asked them to get out. And there was a tussle, and a crowd gathered. And a few blocks away, the rumor spread that a pregnant woman had been beaten and shot by the police. It's ironic, in a sense, because in the other riots of that summer that preceded the Philadelphia riot, that would be in New York and Rochester, there were actual incidents of police brutality, quite vivid ones that triggered this. But police brutality was on people's minds, and even the rumor of it was enough to spark an enormous riot in North Philadelphia.
Right. The backdrop in Philadelphia had been the Philadelphia Tribune, the African-American newspaper, had been doing a lot of coverage about allegations of police brutality. There had been several trials. Police had been acquitted in those trials. So tensions were high. So the tinder was there, even if the spark was specious.
That's precisely it. And I think the important thing is that police brutality had become a central part of the discourse of race in the United States, even though in this particular instance on 28 August, it doesn't appear to have happened.
Right. And that's sort of a cross-cutting theme through most of the major urban riots of the 1960s. Philadelphia's was one of the earlier ones, but Watts, Newark, Cleveland, Huff, all those police brutality played a role.
It's the most common trigger. And yet, it also points to a really interesting and troubling distinction in the way that these riots were interpreted racially. There were a lot of really, really detailed polls done of African-American and white opinion. And what you found when people were asked what caused the riots, over half of African-Americans would name police brutality as one of the causes, and maybe 10% of whites would.
So these are events that, while famous, happened either in the childhoods or before the lives of many of the people listening to us today, Jonathan, but the impacts linger till today.
Yes, they were enormous, and I think the impacts you can see most of all in criminal justice and law enforcement. What happened in the wake of the riots, when you look at those surveys I was referring to, African Americans often pointed to lack of housing, lack of jobs, police brutality as causes for the riots, all causes, incidentally, that would be enumerated in the famous Kerner Commission report that came out a few years later by Otto Kerner, the governor of Illinois. But to whites, the problem was African Americans themselves. And the riots helped actually create a real tectonic shift in American politics. White ethnics, especially in the North, who had voted Democratic, didn't believe that the riots were caused by these social factors, by prejudice and lack of opportunity. They believed they were simply caused by African Americans. And the Republican Party drew millions of these voters through a campaign they called Law and Order. That the problem in our cities isn't lack of opportunity or lack of justice. The problem is lack of order. And so you can see this most dramatically in the 60s with Ronald Reagan upsetting Edmund Jerry Brown in 1966, emphasizing very much the law and order theme in the wake of the Watts riot the previous year. And 14 years later, Reagan would enter the White House using many of the same appeals and themes.
We're talking with Jonathan Zimmerman, a history professor at New York University. This is That's History. So a number of things happened. You know, clearly, first, the concern about, as you mentioned, the urban violence is part of what creates what was known as the silent majority for Richard Nixon. And then Ronald Reagan with the message of law and order, you know, which is followed up by later Republican candidates, sort of consolidates that shift. Another shift that you think is traceable to these moments in 64, 65, 66 is the American attitude towards guns and the Second Amendment.
Yeah, you know, it's really ironic. In a way, the fruits of the riots are quite contradictory if you think about them politically and historically, because one of them, going back to criminal justice, is the boom in incarceration. promoted initially by Republicans, but then very much picked up on by Democrats. One of the ways that William Jefferson Clinton became president was by demanding harsher penalties for criminals than his Republican opponents had. He was the author of the three strikes and you're out rule, for example, and the expanded use of the federal death penalty. So on the one hand, what you see as a consequence of the riots is a kind of bipartisan consensus on the need to incarcerate millions and millions of people, especially, as it turns out, young African-American men. But at the same time, you also have this interesting bipartisan consensus on the need, indeed, the rights of individuals to arm themselves. So you're empowering the state to jail millions of people in ways that it's never done. But at the same time, you're empowering individuals to arm themselves against each other and, indeed, sometimes against the state. And I think both of these are very much fruits of the riots and were very much bipartisan initiatives.
Winding the clock back a bit more, Jonathan, one thing that people used to seeing the way, particularly northeastern cities look like today, may not be aware is that the large number of African Americans living, say, in North Philadelphia at the time, I believe 400,000 of 600,000 African Americans in Philadelphia were concentrated in that neighborhood, which had many very strong, stable, sort of middle class elements to it. But the arrival of African Americans in these urban areas is actually a fairly recent demographic development. There's one of the unnoticed stories of what was happening was this huge migration from the South.
That's right. You know, the so-called Great Migration in the 1930s, you know, is when we really see the boom in African-American population in Philadelphia and also the concentration in North Philly. Let's keep in mind, of course, that there were plenty of African-Americans in Philly before that time. Remember, W.B. Du Bois wrote his famous treatise, The Philadelphia Negro, in the early 1900s. But at that time, blacks were concentrated elsewhere and in a much smaller number. It's interesting to think about the way our cities grew, because when you think about migration to the cities, often people think about migration from across the Atlantic or sometimes from across the Pacific. But in a city like Philadelphia, by far the biggest migration, the biggest demographic shift involves not people coming from Italy or Ireland, but African Americans coming from the Deep South.
Yeah, when you think about the year 1964, which is, you know, when the North Philadelphia riots occurred, and you think about some things that are sort of now established, the notion that the interstates, you know, being built allowed flight to the suburbs and the Levitt towns being built. All of that in 1964 is events of the last decade.
Right.
You know, this is all very fresh, these sort of social transformations.
Hugely so. And included in all of those, and really important when you think about urban landscapes, is, you know, the so-called urban renewal movement, which went in tandem with the other trends you were describing, what was hugely controversial and also in many quarters despised in the African-American community. It was called Negro removal. And that was very much a theme in North Philadelphia, because the urban renewal projects had actually decreased the amount of available space in places like North Philadelphia, and it actually increased costs for families and worsened the overall housing stock.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University, and this has been That's History. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Chris. It's been good to talk.